You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 772 of the Dressage Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. The Dressage Radio Show is the official podcast of the United States Dressage Federation. On today's show, we are joined by Delia Nash of Kentucky Performance Products to discuss equine asthma and their new product, Airwise. Next, we chat with FEI judge, trainer, competitor, Ann Gribbins about her wonderful book club book, Collective Marks. And last, we chat with Angela Carter about her journey with her amazing Percherone partner, Romeo. This is Reese Koppler Stanfield in Georgetown, Kentucky.
And I am Megan McIsaac from Oregon, Wisconsin, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show.
Hi, Megan. How are you?
Hey, Reese. I am great.
I love that. Well, first of all, I got to say, this is a year and a month anniversary for you.
So it is.
Congratulations. You made it over a year, my friend. And Megan, this is my 13th year. We missed it. June 1st was my first show. 13 years ago, kids. Like, when you're 13, I feel like something happens. So, yes. So we were like, I was like, Megan, it's our anniversaries. So congratulations making 1 year, my friend.
I know. I can't believe it. Thank you for showing me the ropes. And thank you to the Horse Radio Network for having me and Glenn and Jen. I don't know what I'd do without them.
And our listeners. Because also improve over time, right? Like, it'll be fun to go back and listen to your year show. I will never listen to my first show because it was that bad. So I am so thankful that everyone has stuck around for this long, 13 years. So
I was just gonna ask you, what was your best show like that you remember? I mean, 13 years is a long time.
Yeah, you know, there are definitely shows that I remember as really amazing shows. We did one interview of a veteran. This was many years ago. And that was pretty amazing. Like just hearing them talk about, yeah, just being a veteran and riding and they wanted to ride in the military. That was pretty cool. I remember really wonderful Christine Traurig did a Christmas episode. And I don't remember why specifically that one sticks in my mind, but that was just a really wonderful interview. So there have definitely been interviews through the whole time, especially when we get big guests. I you're going to really enjoy that. We had Ann Gribbins on tonight. She's on tonight's show. And I think just when you talk to really famous people and you get to have a conversation and you think, gosh, you know, if I didn't have this microphone, maybe I wouldn't ever have this conversation. So that's what it's such a joy to bring what we get to do to everybody, truly. Like, I feel so lucky that I get to sit in this seat, still in my kitchen, in my yoga pants, and I get to talk to Ann Gribbins and have a conversation. Okay, everybody, of course, my hair is done and I look amazing. But, you know, I think that's so special. And I think that's why you and I are here. And it's a wonderful way that we get to bring our message. And people know now about our friendship and our friends who support us on the show. Because there are times where, you know, literally, usually it's never an hour before the show, but like the morning of, we have a couple friends that we call and we're like, please, please, please come on. We had something happen or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
That happens, you know, and they turn out to be some of the best conversations. So, and you know, the conversation that we had a few weeks ago with Dr. Catherine about her week at dressage camp, that was such a fun thing that I got to help her and do with her. So yeah, I just think it's great. And it's just fun that we get people, everybody has a story. Mm-hmm. And sometimes Megan and I would tell you off air, but like it takes some wrangling sometimes to get someone to come on and tell their story. And, you know, when they come on and they start talking about their story and their horse, like something cool, magical happens. So yeah, I think that's the addicted thing of podcasting. And I'm sure you guys kind of feel that too, of like, we get to share our journeys and our weeks with you. And we do try to be pretty honest. Sometimes there's good and bad. And, you know, we've all cried and laughed together on the show, crappy tears and sad tears. And Yeah, I think that's what keeps us going. And it's so much part of my life now. I think I would so miss everybody, and I would miss kind of the opportunities that we get. So we're very, very thankful. And yeah, it's pretty fun. And I'm so glad, Megan, you took the seat, and it's been really fun for us too. So I know. So there you go. That's 13 years. We'll get you there, Megan. I'll be long retired.
Oh boy.
No.
Oh boy. Nope. I'm only doing it with you, Reese.
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, it's so funny because everyone's like, how do you have a podcast of like stuff you talk about horses? And I was like, have you ever talked to horse people? Like, we could talk about horses for hours and hours.
We could have kept going tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Yes. Tonight. And Griffins was on, and it was so fun. I mean, we could have gone for another hour. I was like, oh my gosh, we're already over time. I'm so sorry. And she just was having a blast. So I think you're going to really enjoy that conversation. And we get to do that one again too, for the book club book. So I hope everyone's enjoying. And this is, you have time before the USDF one to join the book club. So that'll be fun. But Megan, how was your week? What's been going on, my friend?
Oh my God. I went to a horse show and I had fun.
I almost choked on my water. I got a sip of water. I almost choked. I almost spit it all over my computer. What? Have fun? Stop it. Tell me, how'd you have fun at a horse show?
I took my sale horse to a horse show, and we technically weren't ready. I've only had him like maybe a month and a half, but the reason I did it is I really want to support my horse shows.
Yeah.
They're canceling their shows, and the entries are super low. And at the last show, they asked me if I had any students, and I didn't, but I have to break the seal anyway. Right. And it was not a perfect show, but the horse is pretty perfect. And I just had a blast showing my own horse. I really, really enjoyed it.
This is good for me too, because I'm actually doing the same thing next weekend. Woo! So I'll give you a full report. I'm taking my new one out. Same kind of thing. Like, the show is down in entries, and it's at the horse park, and it's in the jumper complex. Actually, it's kind of where the finals are, actually, in those rings. And it's cooler there, and the barns are close. So we're just going to go spend the night on Saturday. We're going to go to school and spend the night, and we're just doing training three just to get out. And you know what? If we can't get in the ring, we won't get in the ring. Like, I'm trying to say no pressure. And all my clients that are going, we're literally all going for fun. And yeah, we're going to have fun. I was like, you're having fun.
You are going to have fun. Yeah. I went with no pressure. I had no idea if I was going to even enter. And we did. And like, it was third three. He decided he wanted to do the pre-St. George test. You know how you go up the center line, ride the change in the zigzag. And for third three, you don't do that. And I was like, how can I be mad? Like, that's where we want to go.
Yeah, you're like, we're just going to ride Pre-St. George. This is amazing.
I had a blast.
I love it. Well, I'm going to take this. I hope everyone's having fun showing this season. I'll let you know. It's, again, same thing. Like, I gotta get them out sometime, and we'll go. And I was like, no pressure. And, you know, my sister and mom are going to come with me, and my niece, and we're just going to have a little fun time. And it's going to be really low key. And, you know, not the Olympic Games here, but we got to break the seal. We got to go. He's got to learn how to show a little bit. So we'll see. So I'm also excited. So I'm so glad. I love that. Well, my friend, also, for me, just a busy work week. Nothing. We actually had an off week for horse shows. There's an event coming this weekend. So, and then a dressage show. So we're back at it. I was like, there was a weekend off. And I usually try to stay home for Father's Day and be with my dad. So as he's been, you know, Megan, he's been to many a horse show on Father's Day.
You can't bring him to another one. Don't do that.
I mean, he would come for sure. You know, he would come, I think. But anytime now in my older years, as I don't have to do that. So any dads that had to be at a horse show, we love you. Thank you. My dad still comes to horse shows.
He's a great dad.
He's a great dad. He had two of us. So I do want to wish all the dads out there happy Father's Day. And if you were at a horse show, my dad would tell you, you only have like 45 more years of that.
So true.
I hope you had fun. So happy Father's Day out there to all the dads out there. Well, we have a great show, and We're going to do this commercial from Kentucky Performance on Airwise. Airwise, is your horse suffering from respiratory problems or intermittent coughing, nasal discharge, seasonal allergies, poor performance, or difficulty breathing during exercise? Kentucky Performance Products has a new supplement, Airwise, that can help. Formulated using synthetic blend of high-quality, potent antioxidants and micronutrients, Airwise is research-proven to help horse maintain healthy respiratory function and has been shown to promote normal respiratory rates, enhance lung functions, support healthy inflammatory response in airways, and maintain immune health. To see if Airwise, you have to get it through your veterinarian, is right for your horse, speak with your vet. Also visit kppusa.com or call 859-873-2974. And now we have a great guest, Delia Nash, president of Kentucky Performance Products. She's going to tell you more about this amazing product. Well, today we are so happy to introduce you to Delia Nash. She is the president and owner of Kentucky Performance. Now, Delia, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Reese. Delighted to be on.
I think purchased the company from Karen, but you've been at KPP since I've known you.
Yeah, I go back quite a while at KPP. Yeah.
You were just the other half. So everybody knows Karen, and Karen has retired and you have the company now, and it's so exciting. So Delia, tell us a little bit about yourself. I wanted everybody to get to know you before we start our chat today.
Well, you probably can tell by my accent, I'm not a native Kentuckian. I grew up in Ireland and came over here first, I believe, in 1996. I don't like to think about that because...
Yeah, we don't like dates. Yeah,
for us now. It reminds me of a certain age that I don't like to think about. I was just here in work experience from school at that stage and worked in the thoroughbred breeding side of things. Went back to school and finished my education and have pretty much been here since 2000. So even though I did develop a love for the thoroughbred industry when I was here in 96, I've kept that as my hobby and kind of moved into the nutrition side of things as the way to pay the bills. So I do breed thoroughbreds and race them, but I don't rely on that for my income, thankfully.
Well, you had a big winner in Sibelius. I mean, you really have owned. He won the Dubai World Cup. Did I get that right?
He won the Golden Shaheen race on Dubai World Cup Day, which was, it was basically the sprint race of the World Cup. Yeah, to say that I've been fortunate is the understatement of the century. To win that race was amazing, but to have a horse like Sibelius, he's a unique character, and he was a fantastic racehorse, but he's just got a personality to go with it, and just feel super, super fortunate to all the places he took us throughout the US in his racing career, and then to Dubai twice and to win that race was, it's the stuff of dreams.
I like get chills when I think about it, because I also, Allie O'Dwyer has been on, her husband Jerry was the trainer, and he may be going to the Retired Racehorse Project, I've heard. So stay tuned, everyone.
Yeah, that's the plan right now. He's picking up some new skills, hopefully, as we speak.
Yes, I'm so excited. He's coming here this week. We're excited for a KPP team. It's going to be so much fun. But I love it. So Delia, you're actually coming on today because you were here at the farm. We got to chat and I needed you to help me with some horses and we were making some projects and doing some things. And we were talking about a new product that's out and I didn't know anything about it. And I was like, we need to save this for the tape. So tell us a little bit about this new product because it's really exciting.
Yeah, earlier this year, we launched a new product called Airwise. And this is a product that's been in development for a number of years. We did all the research on it at the University of Georgia with Dr. Kelsey Hart. And we're really excited about the data that we got in those studies. So you might ask, well, what is Airwise? What does it do? It's for horses that have equine asthma. So under the equine asthma heading, we have inflammatory airway disease, horses that suffer from allergies, basically any inflammation of the airway tract. And how horses might present with this is coughing would be definitely a sign, you know, maybe a little bit of discharge out of the nostril. These are all very visual signs, maybe a horse that's struggling a little bit to breathe, or you notice an increase in respiration rate. But some of the more subtle signs, maybe a horse that's just not performing to full potential. And sometimes you can't always tell that. So there's so many horses out there that suffer from this, and the degree of it can vary quite a bit. But it's kind of alarmed me when I started digging into the data, and this is going back to my thoroughbred background again, that about 80% of racehorses have mild asthma, and it does have a direct correlation to their ability to perform, the speeds that they can run at, and the number of times that they come first, second or third. Granted, we're not on the audience today is a little bit different than racehorse audience, but yeah. I don't think it's breed specific. I think what we're dealing with is the environment that we have horses in. And by that, I mean that we confine horses, we have them in barns a lot. So it's more the environment than the breed.
I would agree. I have a horse that's on hydroxyzine. I know you're not a vet, but would you think I could add it in? I'm also going to talk to my vet about this. Or do you think it could take the place of hydroxyzine?
I think you can definitely add it in. You know, we're talking about a nutrition supplement.
Okay.
So, you know, I would never say that it replaces anything that your vet is going to prescribe from a drug aspect. But what it can do, hopefully, is reduce the amount of time that you have to be on the more potent treatment, and something that's more appropriate for long-term use as well.
Awesome. And how would our listeners find more information about it? Go to your website or contact you?
Yeah, you can do both. You can go to kppvet.com, or if you go, which is the site where we have the Wiser Concepts products, which are our veterinary products. Or if you go to KPP USA, you'll find a link that'll take you to that site. And any of your listeners can reach out to me anytime. My email address is on our website, but just call our office anytime and you'll get connected to me.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely contacting you.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, Delia, like, and I don't know the statistics for sport horses either, but I have also had horses in the past that have had trouble. And I'm personally an asthmatic, so I get it. Like, for me today, I'm struggling a little bit with the air quality because it got really humid and hot today, and we haven't had that. So what are some signs, like if you're like, my horse is just a little funny, what are some advice for asthma symptoms that you would see with your horse, or if they're just not 100%?
I think probably the main sign that you'll see is a little bit of coughing, or, you know, the equine asthma is kind of a heading that you think, well, gosh, my horse doesn't have asthma. You know, he's not struggling that much. That's a new phrase that was coined more recently to cover all of the different breeding issues that a horse might have. So some of these can be extremely subtle. But I think coughing would be maybe the first sign, or just that little bit of discharge. They would be the main initial signs. But sometimes you may not even see a whole lot of that. You know, if you just kind of find that your horse isn't performing to the level that he should be at, you know, it's something that you can look further into, or just if you see a little bit of heavy breathing. And I agree with you, today was pretty nasty here.
Oh, so humid. Yeah. And I was like, why do I have a cough today? It's so funny. You're like saying this. And I was like, I need to like get off this and do my inhaler. I mean, I was like, there's the cough. I was like, why do I have this weird cough today? And that's exactly right. I personally missed it on myself. So it would be easy to do it on a horse, especially when you're traveling or when things are just not 100% right.
And you know, if any of your listeners suffer from allergies themselves, like, I mean, it's not necessarily asthma, but just suffer a little bit from allergies, you know, some of those it's very similar symptoms in the horse. So it could be just, you know, very subtle symptoms and not necessarily that, you know, there's difficulty breathing, but it could escalate to that over time, because basically what we're dealing with is inflammation in the respiratory tract. So if it goes untreated, it can escalate.
Yeah. So I'm actually getting a question from our producer, Jen, and she said, would a horse be getting be getting tired be a symptom or lack of stamina? Like he should be fit, but he still gets tired. Would that be a similar symptom?
I think lack of stamina would definitely be a symptom, you know? I mean, if a horse is struggling to breathe, and I use that word struggling to breathe very loosely, but, you know, if they're not getting adequate air supply, that's going to impact performance. And it could just be a very subtle restriction in air supply, but, you know, these are athletes. So, you know, just a minor impact on breathing can have an impact on performance.
Right. Right. That makes total sense.
And again, going back to that thoroughbred data, this was mild asthma. This would probably never have been diagnosed. This was a big study that was done. So, you know, these horses were probably acting completely normal. It wasn't until they took samples of the fluid in the respiratory tract that they were able to identify them as being mildly asthmatic. And then they had all of their racing record, and there was a direct correlation with performance. And this wasn't isolated to one racetrack either. I think there was at least three or four different racetracks involved and several different trainers involved. So, you know, it was maybe 200 or 300 horses were studied.
Got it. So, Delia, can you do us a favor and just explain the vet side of KPP? Because I think sometimes people they don't understand, like I use insulin-wise a lot. And that is something that has to come through the vet, right? Air-wise, that's the vet side. So can you explain that a little bit so people understand you have to go through your vet, right, to get these products?
Yeah, so anything that has WISE in the name of it is part of our vet line. So the line is called Wiser Concepts, but all of the products have WISE in the end of the name. And the reason that we have that line is just a little bit along the lines of the questions that you're asking tonight. We feel that it's important that the vets are involved in helping to diagnose these horses. And is a product like AirWise appropriate as your only solution, or do you need to use a product like AirWise and get a little bit more aggressive with some other treatments for a short period of time? There's all different scenarios, but we feel it's important that the veterinarian is involved with you in making these decisions. So that's why we have that vet only line that, I guess, products that are just a little bit more complicated in what they do.
Like the insulin wise, that's an amazing product, but you know, that's for horses that have insulin resistance. And so, you know, we use that with our vet in explaining the diet and all the other things that's going on. So it would make sense with the asthma too, from somebody who has asthma. Like it's a whole comprehensive allergy program for me. It's, you know, the inhaler and that kind of stuff. And so I can understand that makes total sense.
Yeah. That's a perfect way of putting it, that it's the whole program. And you know, we want you to get the best results, so we want the product to be used appropriately.
Makes sense. And they're really, really phenomenal products. So I love it. So one more time, do you mind explaining, like, how can people find you online? They can call. That is the one that amazing thing about KPP is the customer service. If you have a question, Delia will help you. Her team will help you. And also just the information that you put out in general as a company is phenomenal information just to read if your horse has that problem. So how can they find you online again and get the information?
Yeah, if you go to our websites, KPPUSA or KPPVet.com, all our contact information will be on there. The office number is 859-873-2974. And you can ask for me. If I'm not in the office, they'll get a message to me and I will return your call. Or you can email me as well, DeanAsh@kppusa.com. And that's the good thing about being a small company. You can get directly to me if need be.
50-pound feed bags, bulky supplement tubs, and gallon fly spray refills, no problem. At Chewy, every order over $49 ships for free. So if you can stock up on all of your horse's favorites without the heavy lifting, order online or in the app and let Chewy deliver everything they need fast and free right to your barn so you can spend more time with your horse Start shopping now at chewy.com/equine. And without further ado, our next guest needs no introduction. It is the lovely Ann Gribbins.
Well, tonight we have an author on, and really she needs no introduction. Ann Gribbins, she's the author of our book club, Collective Remarks. And Ann is a 5-star dressage judge. She was the technical dressage advisor for our team from 2010 to 2012. She's trained numerous CDI horses and riders, and it's truly an honor to have her on the show. Ann, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, you're the kind of interview that I honestly still, after 13 years of podcasting, get a little hyped up and a little nervous in a good way to have you on, because it's such an honor. So we're thrilled. And I love this book. I hope everyone has read it and or will get it and continue to read it, because it's phenomenal. And the chapter that really came out, because it's really being discussed right now, is the first riding instructors and how important that is, and also being coachable. So can you talk a little bit about this concept? Because this was great.
Well, I think that as people move on in their riding and get better and get more experience, get better horses, etc., it shows what they have in the bottom of their riding. And at times, they don't realize that the reason that they are moving on and that they are doing well is most possibly because the very first person that taught them had the right idea, the right system, and also could actually express it in a way that made sense to them, even when they were very young and very inexperienced. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when people look back, they don't remember or they don't understand how valuable that is to start off on the right foot. And that's why in this country, of course, we don't have to have, everybody doesn't have to have a license to teach riding. Yes. That's not true about most other countries. You have to have a license. You have to have a government license to be allowed to teach. And there's a certain selection then, of course, right away. But that hasn't stopped us in the United States from producing very good teachers. But they usually came in like the second wave. You know, yes. Those of us who had the first horses, we trained ourselves, we went to Europe to get instruction, because there was nobody here when I started in the 70s to really help in the 80s. We had to go abroad. There was not enough to go around or people who actually knew what they were doing when it came to dressage. But then the second generation, well, the first one actually, which is people of my age, we learned from them, and those of us who like to teach and enjoy the interaction with other riders and enjoy the process of watching horses and people learn, then we carried it on to the next two generations. We're about on the third generation now. Okay. And these people that are now starting seriously to ride don't have to go abroad. They have plenty of good teachers here. And, you know, but they don't realize how lucky they are.
No. I mean, I was still in the generation that went abroad, and, you know, both Megan and I are USDF certified. And I think that program is continuing. It's not a perfect program. I think we can all say that, but at least it is a program, and something is happening, and we're trying to make that program better and better. And I love too, you talked about that, but you also talked about being a coachable athlete. And I think that was really impactful for me, that whole concept of being coachable.
Well, that's the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
You know, the person that is learning has to be receptive. They have to be able to take criticism on board and understand that you mean well for both them and the horse. And of course, the instructor has to know what kind of horse they should be riding. And very often, people start off on the wrong foot with that. Even, you know, adults that are learning the sport, they just want this fancy horse that has wonderful movement and is young enough and all this nonsense. But that's not who is going to teach you to ride. It's the good old schoolmaster that's going to really teach you the ropes. And then maybe one day you can look around for that lovely horse that is going to carry you to glory. But it's yes. not going to be your first horse.
No. And you also had, this was one of my favorite chapters because I just laughed through the whole thing. On page 102, you talked about the cast of characters, the lawn ornament, the chili peppers. Like, I loved that chapter. And you talked about the playboy.
The hypochondriac.
But you know, I have schooled so many horses, I've ridden so many horses, that I can now almost, you know, after a little while with the horse, I can tell which one is this.
Yeah. Yes. How is this one? So funny. And the playboy, you're talking about the stallions being the playboys. I love that. I just got a kick out of this chapter. And the ideal. Can you talk about the ideal? This was interesting. I liked that one.
Well, you know, the ideal, of course, doesn't exist.
Right.
Like the perfect human being doesn't exist. But if you can even get close to it, that would be nice.
Right.
So it would be the kind of horse that is, first of all, likes people. And all of them don't, you know, that gets it, gets the thing that we are going to have a way to communicate. And they are might even be interested in other than to get fed and cared for. But they, when they're interested in being ridden, you can tell almost right away if a horse buys in to the whole thing of being a riding horse or really thinks the whole thing is ridiculous. And that doesn't take long, because the ones that don't get it or aren't that interested, they'll do it and they'll go along and they may be very lovely and safe to ride, but they never develop a pride in what they learn. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're a little bit like slaves. They just do it because, yeah, that's their job. And they look at it as somebody who has a really boring job or a necessity, you know, to earn a living. Then there are ones that, to me, become very interesting to ride, are the ones that do understand when they learn things. And even if it was hard for them to learn, when they get it, it's like, oh, and you can literally feel the dime falling. And they go, oh, that's what you want. Oh, well, that isn't so hard. And this is more or less how you go on and teach them one thing after the other. When you first introduce it, they may either get confused or scared or just resist and all this. But the ones that have that way to communicate with human beings, they will eventually go, maybe you have a point. And then the beauty of it is that if you have such a horse that is willing to communicate, then eventually down the road now, when you say you have taught them all the movements in FEI and even towards Grand Prix, and each one of my good Grand Prix horses and good show horses came to a point sometime a year or two after they learned all the movements, that they had graduated. They understood that. And then it's almost like one day they just sort of exhaled and looked around and said, ha, I know it all now. And then after that, they would be helpful. You know, if I messed up, if I didn't ride well on a day, they could go, oh, come on now, you can do better than that. I know what you want. You know, they almost took care of me. And that's just a great feeling. So, and then you have a totally different relationship, because not only do they know their job, they look forward to it. And I've had a couple of horses that that I wrote and showed a lot, that would literally, they get the whole thing. They understood about the show. They understood about the shipping there. They understood what they were doing in the stalls. And then the warm-up, and then they literally would drag me to the ring for their own sake.
Yes.
This is because they liked being, you know, liked the spectators. They liked the attention. Yeah. They even liked the applause. They got to know that this was all about them.
Yeah. And were those your CDI horses, your international?
Yeah,
were those
those would be the ones that were going Grand Prix, you know, and then Jeff. Mm-hmm. And it was just a great feeling because they also knew when something was my fault. So I love that when they really understood the whole game. And then we would like at times to try to, you know, horse had worked for a long time, especially we had a farm where that was a regular riding academy on Long Island for many years. Yes. And then we had a certain group of horses that were our dressage horses. And we had a couple of real gems that were, you know, old horses, but real go-getters. And they had worked for us sometimes for 5 or 10 years doing their thing. And then eventually it was time to retire them.
Yeah.
And we had one star. His name was Trenzado. He was a Chilean thoroughbred. He had gone in two games. I think Pan Am Games, but maybe even Olympics, one as a jumper and one as a FEI Grand Prix horse. And Linda Oliver owned him. And at some point, we were riding in a quadrille together at the Washington International, and she rode Pensado. And then a little later in life, he had a problem. She lived in Virginia, and he had a problem breathing. And the vet had said, look, this horse needs to go somewhere close to the ocean, close to the water. It would make it easier for him to breathe. So she called me and she gave us the horse.
Oh,
and of course, I knew the horse already. Yeah. And he was about 17 when we got him. Well, he ended up being our superstar and working for us for, we tried to retire him when he was like 23. And he would have none of it.
That's funny. He's like, no way.
No way. So we tried to turn him out by himself in the nice, you know, paddock.
Yeah.
And it took about an hour and boom, ba-da, boom, ba-da, boom, and he'd be standing in the barn. And we forgot he was a jumper.
Yeah, he was a jumper. He's like, I can still do it.
That's right. So he's standing in the barn. So I had enough of the flies and this was boring. And what happened to the grooming, you know, and the pack up? Okay.
Where are the people?
Oh, yeah. And where are the people? So, and then we tried to turn him out with a pony. So he demolished the pony. That was way, way beneath him.
Oh, and no.
Finally, we turned him out in our stallion paddock with these huge fences that were big poles, you know, of fencing him, said he's not going to be able to jump out of that. And he died. He tried.
Almost got
hung up in the stifles.
Oh.
Okay, so we just gave up. We said, fine.
Yeah, you're like, never mind.
Groom him, tuck him up.
Yeah.
And we worked him for several more years. We couldn't stop him. He was just unstoppable. He needed his grooming, he needed his people, and he needed to work. And finally, it was a very slow, you know, variety of dressage, but that was it. And eventually this couple came in from Massachusetts and they were looking for a wonderful horse to trail ride. And they were elderly, but they were, you know, decent riders. And we were thinking, well, I don't know what. And all of a sudden, David, my husband, and I looked at each other and we said, Prenzado.
We got one for you.
Well, we made them promise and swear that they would take him out, groom him every day, ride him every day.
Oh.
And they kept him there for 5 or 6 years. And I got these Christmas letters from Trenzado that told me all about this couple, how they took care of him, what the cats did, what the dogs did, you know, and all this. And it was just, and finally one day I got this panic call. The horse is now like 30, plus 32, 33. And this wonderful woman says, oh, Trenzado is down in his stall. It looks like he's calling. What should we do?
Oh, it's time.
I said, maybe just hold on to him, kiss him on the nose and call the vet.
Yes. You're like, it's time.
God. It was, yeah. So, but anyway, so there are horses that get the game, and many of mine did. One was my, you know, Pan Am and later Olympic horse, Metallic. He loved to show, and really training, he thought was a complete waste of time. But that was, you know, he could be lazy, he could be backwards, but when it came to showtime, he'd better be on the van. And I've had seven, and then I had one just the opposite. Lovely to school and a super nice horse. And I spent some time in Germany with him, with Harry Bolt, and his name was Don Extra. And he would do anything I asked. But he got completely panicked in the test.
Oh, wow.
And he wouldn't, not so that he misbehaved, he just stopped breathing.
Oh,
he held his breath. He would come in the test and he would start holding his breath, because he was so intent on not making mistakes, and he was so, and it was just, you know, he obviously didn't enjoy the whole thing.
No.
He was just so afraid to fail that, you know, and not be praised, that he just couldn't. And he was fine through Pre-St. George, but once he got into Grand Prix, that was too much for him. Yeah.
Interesting. So, you know, I think that's really interesting how some just are able to do it and some aren't. That's really. And then what happened with that horse?
He eventually, I sold him to an amateur that never pushed him to go do a Grand Prix test. So he stayed at the small level and was perfectly happy, although he was very good at all the Grand Prix, particularly good at Piaf and Passage. But something clicked in his head and he just thought, well, the requirements were just more than he could handle. So he wouldn't breathe right. And you know, you get, that's a lot of tests, the Grand Prix. And when you get
when you're not breathing,
the horse acts like he's going to faint. You know, this is not good. So.
Not good at all. I loved your book, Anne. Thank you so much. And I really enjoyed the sections on judging and being judged and your honesty about being a judge. One of the chapters were the perfect show through the judge's eyes. And I've gone through the L program and I know I don't want to be a judge. And just hearing, you know, the joy of judging, 20 years to become an eye judge. Wow. Thank you.
Well, that's a whole different chapter and a whole different skill, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it does help you as an instructor to be a judge, because you can play both sides of that. You can be the rider instructor and, you know, feel that, know it and know what to say. But you can also suddenly switch on your judge's hat and go, and now I want it to look like this. And, you know, that's a different side of the coin, isn't it?
Oh, it's huge. And the education that you've gone through, the seminars, I mean, I knew about our L program. It's just really awesome. And then, so thank you for your honesty there. And then I wanted to talk about the last chapter, you know, that you had, which is Who's Next? Talking about our youth and ponies and developing our own horses. And I think we stopped at 2012 is the year that you stopped writing the articles. Do you think that we've grown, or do we still need to work on our ponies and our riding schools and developing our own horses?
When it comes to ponies, yes. Yeah. And when I was the technical advisor, I set up the whole original educational program with, you know, developing coach and young horse coach and the whole thing. We already had somebody working as a young horse coach, but I incorporated the whole program. So I asked Debbie McDonald to be my developing coach. And then I said it. And then also I wanted a youth coach, and we got that too. But I never was able to get a pony coach, and I wanted Lendon Gray for the ponies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that would have been perfect. But somehow at that time, our finances were meager. They were not good at all. We were not in a financially strong position. And honestly, the you know, USCF said, look, we just can't, you know, we can't afford it and we're not interested. However, it should have been set up sometime sooner. And the reason is that the ponies is what actually really fosters not only the kids, but the parents.
Sure.
And your parents for pony kids become your best sponsors.
Yes.
And there's built-in sponsorship there. And also the ponies, they will foster kids better than any teacher.
It's true.
They are. And then you go and then you wonder why the Europeans come up with these new wonderful young riders all the time. If you try to judge a young rider class or a pony class in Europe, it's very, very, very hard to do because they are all perfect. They are so good. And, you know, 24, I was at Compiègne, 24 or 5 ponies in a class. I almost fainted dead away. I had no idea. They were so good. And, you know, they don't do a whole lot. So you have to be paying attention every second to what possibly could go wrong. And nothing ever does. And now you know where all these sudden star riders come from. That's where they come from.
Ponies.
They started with ponies, then they went to young riders, and now they're in the bottom. They had all this fabulous education from both teachers and ponies. And boy, they sit like planted on the horse, and they are so good, so early. And that's why they have so many coming generations, what they call Nachwuchs, which is what comes after. The next growth. And that's what we have all struggled, my generation of teachers in the United States struggled to produce those riders. And then those riders are now teaching the next group. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's working. The going down the ranks from, you know, that's not now trickling down in a good way. But I still think that we are missing a lot by not having real strong pony divisions for dressage horses. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, if we offer the party, they probably will come.
Yeah.
But we don't have it, you know, and it's just all those ponies that are perfectly capable of doing a dressage test are out there jumping, you know, 2-foot mm-hmm. fences their whole life. Mm-hmm. And we have masses of them. And why couldn't the kids do both?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. And of course, most teaching of riding in Europe is just in reverse of the hunter jumper. The first thing that I saw here.
Yeah.
Were, of course, hunter jumpers, there was no dressage really, except in certain little, you know, places in the United States. But nobody could spell it. Nobody knew what we were. And when we put out our first dressage ring on Long Island, people stood around and they'd come and they go, what's those letters about? And, you know, You know, they had not the slightest clue.
So we should set up a booth at the pony finals here in Kentucky. And maybe I should give away some, you know, like have a ice machine or something. Like come hither.
But you need to install a good pony coach. That's part of it. But you know, pony coach, pony classes, you know, big ribbons, big hoopla, and start it somewhere for only ponies, not for adults riding ponies. That's a different division. That's cute, but so that the ponies they get a value of their own as dressage horses here, and they breed ponies in Europe, as you well know, that are like miniature superstar horses. Yeah. Oh.
I just was always sad I was too big to ride them.
I know. They're delicious looking. They're just unbelievable.
So amazing.
But they're not that easy to ride.
No.
No.
Those firecrackers.
Sure. But, you know, I do that is something. And also another problem that we still to some degree have, which you could tell from the very last Olympics, there's two traditions in Europe. And one is the whole pony thing and the riding schools, which we don't have regular riding schools here. Yeah. Of course, we had a riding school, my husband, but that's only because that's how I learned. And that's how we ran our business. But they're very far and few between where you can go and take a child or a young rider or, you know, somebody that's learning and just let them ride with good instruction on horses they don't have to own. So, you know, here you have to own the horse or you have to have a friend that owns a horse. So you can't just go and learn how to ride. And every community in Scandinavia, in Germany, in France, in Holland, have riding schools because that's part of their top sport. Like in Sweden, riding is like the second or third sport of the country after, after soccer and some, and maybe ice hockey, and that's it. And it's riding. So there's riding schools everywhere, community owned. And they have the horses, and that's how I spent years at one of those in Gothenburg. So that's a big, you know, difficulty that you can't just go and learn to ride easily. And then the other problem is our lack of people, good riders, that are unwilling to school and bring their own up the ranks. And that's something that, you know, never has happened. This habit we have gotten into, unfortunately, of buying ready-made horses from Europe, I can assure you they'll never sell us a Grand Prix horse that's going to beat them in the Olympics.
No way.
Not going to happen. So, no way. And so you really... we have to school our own. And that's how it always used to work in the beginning here when Dressage. But what you'd have is, you know, a horse that maybe was starting to go into FEI levels. And then you had one that was one level lower and one that was 5-year-old something. And if you were really lucky, you have a 2-year-old that you were looking at in the paddock. And there was like a ladder of horses behind you. And that's how those people, the riders over there, always show up with another horse. How come they all show up with another horse and another? Because they have a ladder of horses. And yes, some of the very famous ones get given younger horses on, but they train them. And they are not afraid of getting on a young horse. And they also know how to ride a young horse because they learned that. And that's super important. I think that is what's lacking in some of our riders. They don't know how to school a young horse and train it. And they're not interested in taking the time. And then they get very young. They start getting to be quote-unquote professionals. Well, now they have to busy themselves with teaching lessons to make the money so they can support their horse. And so on. So it's definitely a financial and a cultural problem. Because their thinking isn't, okay, so I'm training this horse and he is now almost Grand Prix, but I've got to have a Prix St. George horse. And I have to have a third level horse. And I have to have one that is a first level horse. What am I going to do when my Grand Prix horse is too old or not sound or... You know, that's how you have these people coming up with another one all the time. That, for example, when I was judging in Tryon, we had a terrible problem. And I was the head of the grand jury and we had a hurricane. And that was at the World. The question games in Tryon. Big problem, right?
It was big problems.
So, masses of meetings and, you know, with everybody and so on. Could we please somehow have the freestyle on Sunday, although the hurricane was still hanging around. And, you know, I finally found a place where the footing would be okay and we could do it, but not until Monday morning because the ring wasn't available. They were doing something else in it. So then I went back for the umpteen time to the chef de kips and told them, look, we actually, we had the plane moved. You can fly out on Tuesday instead of Monday. We can run it either Sunday night or Monday morning, and we can have the freestyle. And they were such a good crew, and they all were dying to ride the freestyle. And all of a sudden, the chef de kips from Europe said, "Oh no, we can't do that because so and so is going to leave on Thursday for the young riders for the young horse championships oh. in Fez or wherever it was that year." So now you can tell the reason they couldn't let me do it, we couldn't have it, is that those same riders had to get right on the plane after these games, get home, get on their young 4, 5, 6-year-old, 7-year-old, and go to the young horse championships. So now you can tell where they are.
Yeah, you could.
That's right. Because they're not just riding that one horse around.
In the WEG. Yeah. They've got a whole string. They got a whole string.
And that's where we are failing, because the riders have to understand that they have to have up-and-coming horses behind them, or they will never stay in the game. Mm-hmm. You can't sit around when you've been successful and wait for some sponsor to stick a horse under your behind.
Yeah.
That is so just not.
And that is another great chapter. And I wanna talk about that. We could literally keep you on here all night, because this is so interesting. And you can see how Anne's book is amazing, because it just talks about so many aspects of the sport. And we've already gone over time with you. And I hope this really whets everyone's appetite for the webinar that Anne is gonna come back on with us on July 9th. At 8 p.m. through USDF. This is through our book club. You can see why we chose Anne to come, because she's so amazing. And if you haven't, this gives you time. If you have not got the book from Trafalgar Square or horseandriderbooks.com, it is Collective Remarks from Anne Gribbins. And this is your time. You can get the book and get started and get it read by the time of the book club. And Anne, we're going to have to go into that. I would really like to literally talk about the sponsorship and that's also not an easy road and a different road.
And I do mention that too.
Yes, that you has, talk.
That's a two-edged sword.
It's a very, very interesting topic that needs to be discussed as well. And if we don't get to it in the webinar, I would love to have you back on, because that's such an important topic that we need to talk about as well. But we could seriously keep you on all night. But I hope everyone is as excited about the webinar as we are. And this is such a phenomenal book, and it has so many different topics that it covers. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for your time tonight. We so appreciate you.
Well, of course, I thoroughly enjoy it. And I could go on all night too, but you better shut me down now.
Thank you.
We love it. Well, no, that just means we'll have you back on and we'll talk more. Yeah. So I love it. Well, Anne, thank you so much for your time. And we can't wait. We're going to be back on with you on July 9th. This was just a fun dry run for that. So thank you so much for your time tonight.
Easy, effective, and eco-friendly fly control starts with Fly Predators. Fly predators are the organic, natural way to dramatically minimize your fly problem. Learn more about fly predators and other Spalding Labs fly control solutions at Spalding, SPALDING-labs.com.
Well, we are so excited to have Angela Carter on the show tonight. She is from Oregonia, Ohio, and she is a gold medalist on her horse, The Knight is Romeo. Angela, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so excited. Well, first of all, you and your horse went viral. That's how we picked it up. So we love it. So tell us a little bit about your horse, The Knight is Romeo. I think you call him Romeo. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, I have had him since he was 4. He is currently now 17 years old. And I actually purchased him to be a lesson horse because I was retiring my previous lesson horse. And I never, ever intended to be, doing the Grand Prix with him. I started riding him as a 4-year-old. He couldn't even canter. And I was like, well, I've got to get him in shape so that my lesson students can ride him. So I taught him his leads. And then, you know, then I just kept riding him. And it was just like, oh my gosh, he's so smart. And he had such a great work ethic that I couldn't stop with him, you know? And he's just such a worker, and he loves his job. I mean, he doesn't obviously know anything else, but he definitely loves it for sure.
I love your story. Is it true that you really bought him off of Craigslist?
Yes, that is true.
And yeah, before you bought him, he did Civil War reenactments and they shot guns like on him. I think like,
oh yeah,
your story is just so amazing. I just love it. And can you tell us like, what is his favorite movement? What does he like to do best?
I think his favorite is changes.
Okay.
He is just, and you know, obviously most people have seen him. He is a heavy horse. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, of course, look at him and go, oh my gosh, that thing's going to do dressage, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And then.
Yeah. And you're like, I'll show you gold medal, people. I love that.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, he's very light on his feet. And, you know, and he really just loves to perform. And he is definitely, I mean, he's such a ham because he is, the more people that are watching him, the more he shows off.
I love it.
I'm just like, because last year when we were at regionals, that was at the horse park, and he was, you know, we showed, I think, about 7 o'clock. So we were the evening entertainment because we did our musical freestyle. And all of the people, and I've got video of it, you know, everybody in the crowd in the pavilion were clapping to our music. And he just lit up, you know, and in a good way, you know, he was clapping for me. Yeah, he was like, they're here for me, you know? And so he's definitely a performer.
And what has been one of the things he struggled with in teaching him all the way to the Grand Prix?
Well, this is something that we continue to struggle with, is just, I would say, our pirouettes are mm-hmm. very difficult for him because mm-hmm. he struggles to lift himself. And so, you know, he's just never going to have a lift that a warm blood does, you know, mm-hmm. and that's okay. You know, it's okay. Fine. It is absolutely what it is.
Yeah.
Because we highlight other things. And so as I've brought him along, that's what my focus was, because I knew there were going to be difficulties conformationally that he was always going to struggle with. So instead of me drilling those things over and over and just making him kind of, I wouldn't say sour to them, but you know, just I didn't want to put a bad taste in his mouth, you know? And I was just like, let's focus on the things that you love to do and make those as brilliant as we can, and highlight the heck out of those. And then we can still work on the hard things, but you know, let's, you know, highlight everything that we can do amazing.
Yeah. And I think that's such a great point. And I say this too, because I have a client that shows Dr. Catherine, she was on the show and she shows a wonderful ranch horse, but uh-huh. he doesn't have the movement of warm blood. Like, we know that. So we have to be so technically correct on so many things, where maybe you would actually have a little easier time if it was, you know what I'm saying? Like that's not the reality. So we have to highlight things and do things really well. Like, have straight center lines, have square halts, have correct walk pirouettes or turn on the haunches.
Absolutely.
those non-brilliant movements are really, really critical, because if you have a mistake there, then you don't get as much leeway later in the time.
Yes, correct. Yes. And that is also one thing that I always strived with him as I brought him up the levels, is my correctness with any movement. You know, it might not be an 8, but it would be, you know, it would be a 7 because it was correct, you know, or a 6.5. So yeah, that was always super important.
No, I love that.
I just love your attitude towards the training. I've trained a lot of Frisians, and I think they wouldn't have been as successful without that attitude that you highlight, you focus on their strengths, and you just keep chipping away at what their weaknesses are. I think that's such a great attitude and approach to a non-warm blood. And look at the heart that your horse has.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I always said, you know, every ride that I rode on him, and still to this day, I always think to myself, I just want 1% better than yesterday, you know, and because that 1% adds up. And some people, I think, have a false impression that their horse is going to come out and be 10% better or 15% better, you know, and that's just not realistic for them. You know, they have to build the strength and the balance themselves, and that takes time. So I feel like 1% is not unrealistic for them, you know. And I don't mean 1% better overall. I mean, maybe one thing, you know, maybe my half pass was 1% better than yesterday, or, you know, whatever it is, you know? So I just really try not to focus on making everything perfect, because it's just, I mean, come on, we're all, let's be real. Is it always ever perfect?
No. Yes, exactly. We are always out for perfect. No, I love that. Well, what is the next plan for you and Romeo?
Well, I am already qualified for regionals this year at Waterloo.
Yeah.
So we will be there. Next, in 2 weeks, we'll be at WEC in Wilmington for Pony Cup.
Awesome. Woohoo!
So we will be doing our freestyle there all weekend. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Well, we will cheer you on.
That sounds fantastic. And Angela, where can our listeners find you online to keep an eye on your journey and support you and Romeo on that journey?
So, I mean, my Instagram page obviously is currently the easiest thing that people follow. And that is The Night Is Romeo with the underscore in between each word.
I love it. I love it. Well, you got 2 new followers already. If Megan already isn't, I'm going to jump on there. I can't wait to see your journey. So thank you so much for your time tonight, and good luck at regionals and nationals as well, we hope.
Yes, thank you.
Well, we are so excited because we are in now the Collective Remarks book club. Tonight, I hope you enjoyed Anne's interview. Literally, we could have gone for hours. And so this is hours. And so this is just a preview of the book club through USDF on July 9th. We're going to have another discussion with Anne. So, and this is the one where you guys can come with questions from the book. So if you haven't read it, you still have time. And it's Collective Remarks by Anne Gribbins. And you can get it at horseandriderbooks.com. We love Trafalgar Square. There have been great supporters of our book club from the beginning when we started it. And now they're supporting us through the USDF as well. So we're thrilled about that. And drumroll, please, Megan, do you want to announce our new book for July through September?
Sure. It is 33 Strength and Fitness Workouts for Horses by Jack Ballou. And it's July through September. I'm really looking forward to it.
Jack's the best. Like we did cover one of her other, she has multiple books. So I'm so excited about this one. It just came in the mail and it's on my desk. And I've been working on Anne's book, but I'm so excited because Jacque is awesome and she's great to interview. If you haven't heard her in on the podcast before, she's wonderful. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. So great news on that. Well, as always, you can find our show notes and links to today's guest on our page at horseradionetwork.com. Just search Dressage Radio Show. Like us on Facebook, just search Dressage Radio Show. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com, and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
And my website is lindenhoff.com, and my email is lindenhoffllc@gmail.com. We'd like to thank our friends and show sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products and Chewy. If you'd like to support our show and the Horse Radio Network, you can do that through the auditor program found at horseradionetwork.com. Keep on kicking on until the next show. Talk to you soon.
Have fun at those shows.
Woohoo!